gonna go ahead and start our meeting then. This is the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners. It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. It's 5:32, and this meeting is being held remotely under COVID-19 emergency rules. If the public wishes to call in, please call 509-824-1884 and enter 115-146-622-pound. And please, feel free to email Nathan Butler at butler@sanjuancountypublichospitaldistrict1.org if they wish to comment. Now we need to do a roll call for Board Recording Secretary Butler, and he will read our names at this time.
Commissioner Clary.
Present.
Commissioner Lehman.
Oops, muted.
Here, present.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Lindstrom.
Present.
Commissioner Lachine Seitz.
Present.
Commissioner Loring.
Here.
Additionally, Chief Kutzing.
I'm here.
And Superintendent Hutchins. She's muted, but she's here. Okay, thank you. Everyone's present.
Great. And now we need to move to approve our consent agenda. I did want to just amend the agenda on behalf of Dr. Corsa, who's calling in tonight to meet with us. But he's on duty at the ICU today, so I'd like to let him go first before we move to audience participation. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Okay, so I would then accept a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended.
I second that.
Okay.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll hit that down.
So all in favor, Commissioner Clary?
Aye.
Commissioner Lehman?
Aye.
I say aye. Commissioner Lachine, aye. And Commissioner Loring.
Aye.
Thank you very much. And we'll hand it off to you, Dr. Persa.
Well, thank you. It's obligatory. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. For those of you that I have not met, my name is Dr. Joshua Corsa. I'm the San Juan County EMS Medical Program Director. I'd like to share a little of my background and discuss my thoughts on the integration of fire and EMS. I was fortunate enough to grow up on a small island on the Outer Banks, North Carolina, very similar to San Juan Island. I earned my EMT in 1996 and became a paramedic in 2005. Graduated medical school in 2012 and currently a trauma surgeon and critical care physician, in addition to being the county EMS Medical Program Director. Additionally, I'm also a surgeon in the Army National Guard with multiple combat deployments. In my 24-year career in medicine, I've had the opportunity to work with multiple EMS agencies, both integrated and divided. These include the largest volunteer EMS system in the world, as well as one of the smallest paid agencies, where I made $9.60 an hour as a paramedic with a four-year degree. I've worked in urban knife and gun clubs and in rural Appalachia. Each has its own rewards and challenges. And I highlight my background merely to demonstrate the depth and breadth of experience that informs the following statements. King County's Medic One program, one of the best EMS agencies in the world, and where we send our paramedics for training, is an integrated system. So is one of the largest fire and EMS departments in the world, the Fire Department of New York. Historically, most of the first paramedic agencies in the country were fire-based, to include Los Angeles, Miami, and Columbus. And to this day, the majority of EMS programs are run through fire departments. And EMS-only agencies make up less than 20% of the EMS providers in this country. In fact, there are only a small handful of public EMS-only departments left in the state. And there's a reason for that. Integrated departments are able to provide the right services faster and more efficiently. Because of their structure, integrated departments can respond to more hazards from more locations with more personnel. Given the facts above, it's a fallacy to think that the fire departments do not or would not prioritize EMS response. It's an integral part of their DNA, no different than house fires or car crashes. To highlight that, EMS calls make up approximately 80% of America's fire department call volume. The county's other integrated departments are no different than this. In the time I've interacted with the county fire chiefs and members, I've never had any indication that EMS would play a subservient role to fire in this integration. It is a merger of equals with the goal to reduce duplicity and increase services through thoughtful decisions and prudent spending. Integration and interlocal agreements can be a powerful tool. As an example, FDA medication purchasing guidelines have changed drastically in the past year. No longer can small EMS agencies such as ours buy one or two of a rarely used medication. Now they must buy them by the case, even if they only use that one or two a year. The increase in costs and overhead has been tremendous. And as a result, the fire and EMS agencies of the county are exploring ways to integrate supply chains, allowing for a significant improvement in efficiency and decrease the costs associated with purchasing these life-saving medications. This is integration, and this is the type of cooperation you need more of, not less. Integration streamlines operations, saves money, and saves lives. The integration is a chance to pave the way for further cooperation between the agencies, not just on this island, but between all the islands in the county. The greatest legacy that we as EMS leadership could leave future generations is a countywide fire EMS district, where the costs and burdens are shared proportionately and the benefits are realized by everyone in both reduced costs and improved services. Unlike what some in the community would have you believe, firefighters and EMTs are far more alike than they are different. In fact, a large portion of the membership belongs to both the fire and EMS departments. Every day they work together cohesively and proudly to serve the citizens of this island. They're united by their passion to serve, no matter the emergency, no matter the time. They don't let the patch on their shoulder define who they are or define when they will or won't help somebody. They do the right thing for their neighbors anytime, every time. And the membership of both departments has taken great strides to further their training and better themselves and better the services they deliver. Integration will only serve to increase that training and readiness. Permanently withdrawing from the ILA and the path towards integration will not stop that increase in cooperation, and nor should it. But it does make the path more challenging, and as a result, makes our firefighters and EMTs' jobs harder. I ask that you ensure that this pause is just that, a pause, and a chance to reset expectations, clear up misunderstandings, and move forward in a thoughtful manner when the time is right. In conclusion, the commissioners and leadership on both sides should incur accountability and transparency, so we end up with a combined department that serves the community's needs and does not sacrifice one function at the expense of the other. Continue with a methodical and logical path towards the integration of fire and EMS. Do it for our volunteers, and most importantly, do it for the citizens of the islands we are privileged to call home. And that's the end of my prepared statement. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Excuse me, Dr. Corsa, I've been getting a text from someone who's trying to call in, and they can't hear anything, unfortunately.
Well, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Could everyone else hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay, good. Could hear you fine. My wife came down and said she was on the phone and did not hear you. And
outstanding.
Three other people did not hear you. They heard each other, but not you.
We are recording this meeting, so we can post it. Unfortunately, this is just.
Is there anything we can do to help this? Because I think this is a very important meeting, and the public needs to hear it.
And that was really well said too, and I would love for everybody else to hear it. Actually,
I'm in.
As the commissioners.
Right. My question is, do you have Microsoft Teams?
Do I?
Yeah.
Yes, I am on it right now.
Okay, so maybe it's only people that have Microsoft Teams that are, people that call in probably can't hear, and that may be the issue. It shouldn't be, but that's probably part of the issue. We've always had that problem with Skype for Business with the county.
Outstanding.
I'm going to text out the number that's on the Teams meeting, 509-824-1884 with 1466 pound. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I heard somebody.
Dr. Corsa, perhaps you could your statement that you prepared for us, if you could email that to our superintendent or to our recording secretary, Nathan Butler, then we can add that to the public record.
Okay. Which will I'd love to, and I have his email already.
Okay, that'd be great. And then just having you here makes me realize that, and this is something you and I talked about previously, how nice it would be to have a more regular connection with you. For our board, and I think that's something that would benefit everyone.
I agree, and I want to be a resource here to help answer any questions you have, or to provide another perspective anytime you want me.
That would be great, and maybe we need to set something up on a more regular basis. I'm sure your schedule, you know, may not be that you can join us every month, but. Maybe that's something we need to get on the schedule. How does everyone else feel about that?
Oh, I love to have your input every month, actually. I think that would be really valuable.
You're not too busy, are you?
Well, this is important to me. Of all the jobs I do, medical director is far and away the most important. And so I've scaled back my full-time job a bit to allow for more bandwidth to do things like this. So. Certainly, with enough notice and being able to plan it far forward, I can attend the meetings.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your input.
I do. And knowing your background is just wonderful.
Well, thank you. And did anyone have any questions, comments, or ugly remarks?
Excuse me for interrupting. Just want to let you guys know everyone's joining now. For whatever reason, the... server wouldn't let them in. I didn't do anything. Just people are spontaneously entering the meeting now. We have a dozen people join in the last 2 minutes.
Oh,
there's no reason for it.
Okay.
It's just, to those people who are on the phone, I apologize. I don't know why or what happened. It seems to be a server-side issue. We didn't do anything. Just randomly were able to connect, and we apologize. Do mute yourselves, though. There's a lot of you. All right, thanks. Sorry.
I know it's kind of an imposition, Dr. Corsa, but I think people might appreciate hearing your statement again. Would you be willing to do it one
more? That is up to the board if they want to torture all the new visitors with that. I certainly can if you guys would like.
It's great. I think
it'd be awesome.
I need to hear it.
Okay. I would like you to do it again.
Okay.
Well said.
Gee, thanks everybody. Okay. Nathan, is that kind of the initial rush, or there's still more people coming and we should wait another minute or two?
They all joined at once.
I don't believe the meeting either.
About a dozen people joined at once within a minute. I assume they were all waiting somewhere in the ether, and Microsoft randomly decided to connect them all at once. So, yes, I can't explain it. I don't know why. It's just, for whatever reason, Microsoft Teams is being glitchy. But they're all here now. There's about 25 people.
They have to pay for the statement. If they're not here yet, they can pay for it later.
We do have it recorded, so that will be available for sure. I can put it up tomorrow.
I'll go ahead and read it one more time. I can do it. I'm pretty quick. So for those who are just joining, it's a prepared statement I have for the board. And so my name is Dr. Joshua Forsa. I'm the San Juan County EMS Medical Program Director. I'd like to share a little of my background and discuss my thoughts on the integration of fire and EMS. I was fortunate enough to grow up on a small island very similar to San Juan Island. I earned my EMT in 1996 and my paramedic in 2005. I graduated medical school in 2012, a trauma surgeon and critical care physician, in addition to being the county EMS medical director. In my 24-year career in medicine, I've had the opportunity to work with multiple EMS agencies, both integrated and divided. These include the largest volunteer EMS system in the world, as well as one of the smallest paid agencies, where I made $9.60 an hour as a paramedic with a 4-year degree. I worked in urban knife and gun clubs, as well as in rural Appalachia. Each has its own rewards and challenges, and I highlight my background merely to demonstrate the depth and breadth of experience that informs these statements. King County's Medic One program, arguably one of the best EMS agencies in the world, and where we send our paramedics for training is an integrated system. So is one of the largest fire and EMS departments in the world, the Fire Department of New York City. Historically, most of the first paramedic agencies in the country were fire-based, to include Los Angeles, Miami, and Columbus. And to this day, the majority of the EMS programs are run through fire departments, and EMS-only agencies make up less than 20% of the EMS providers in this country. In fact, there are only a small handful of public EMS-only departments left in the state. And there's a reason for that. Integrated departments are able to provide the right services faster and more efficiently. Because of their structure, integrated departments can respond to more hazards from more locations with more personnel. Given the facts above, it is a fallacy to think that fire departments do not and would not prioritize EMS response. It is an integral part of their DNA, no different than house fires or car crashes. To highlight that, EMS calls make up 80% of an American fire department's call volume, and the county's other integrated departments are no different. In the time that I have interacted with the county chiefs and their members, I have never had any indication that EMS plays a subservient role to fire in this integration. It is a merger of equals with the goal to reduce duplicity and increase services through thoughtful decisions and prudent spending. Integration and interlocal agreements can be a powerful tool. As an example, FDA medication purchasing guidelines have changed drastically in the past year. No longer can small EMS agencies buy just a handful of a rarely used medication. Now they must buy them by the case, even if they only use one or two a year. The increase in cost and overhead has been tremendous. As a result, the fire and EMS agencies in the county are exploring ways to integrate our supply chains and allow for significant improvements in efficiency and decrease the costs associated with purchasing these life-saving medications. This is integration, and this is the type of cooperation that we need more of, not less. Integration streamlines operations, saves money, and saves lives. The integration has a chance to pave the way for further cooperation between the agencies, not just on this island, but between all the islands in the county. In my opinion, the greatest legacy that we as EMS leadership could leave future generations is a countywide fire and EMS department, where costs and burdens are shared proportionally, and the benefits are realized by everyone in both reduced costs and improved services. Unlike what some in the community would have you believe, firefighters and EMTs are far more alike than they are different. In fact, a large portion of the membership belongs to both the fire and EMS departments. Every day they work together cohesively and proudly to serve the citizens of this island. They are united by their passion to serve, no matter the emergency and no matter the time. They don't let the patch on their shoulder define who they are or define when they will or won't help someone. They do the right thing for their neighbors, anytime and every time. The membership of both departments has taken great strides to further their training to better themselves and better the services they deliver. Integration will only serve to increase that training and readiness. Permanently withdrawing from the ILA and the path towards integration will not stop that increase in coordination, nor should it. But it does make the path more challenging, and as a result, makes our firefighters and EMTs' jobs harder. I ask that you ensure this pause is just that, a pause and a chance to reset expectations, clear up misunderstandings, and move forward in a thoughtful manner when the time is right. In conclusion, the commissioners and leadership on both sides should ensure accountability and transparency so that we end up with a combined department that serves the community's needs and does not sacrifice one function at the expense of the other. Continue with a methodical and logical path towards the integration of fire and EMS. Do it for our volunteers, and most importantly, do it for the citizens of this island we are so privileged to call home.
Thank you.
All right. It's my pleasure. Thank you for letting me read that. And if there are no other questions, I will duck out the back door, as it were.
Yeah, we'll let you get back to work. Thank you so much.
Right, thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, take care. Okay. Well, and so before we go into the audience participation portion of our meeting, you know, I'd like to say I understand why the public may have the perception that the integration of fire and EMS is almost complete, especially because we're seeing a fire truck respond with EMS on calls. And there have been some public statements that imply the success of the integration process up to this point. And I just wanted to state for the record that while combined response is a piece of the process, the majority of the recommendations that were outlined by the Citizens Advisory Group and adopted by both the fire and public hospital district boards have not been started. And because of the challenges we've had within this process as a board, and, you know, with which the integration process has been managed, and now the unknowns of the coronavirus, and really we have a need as a board, and our chief, you know, has the need as well to be focused and managing the health of EMS. So we did pause integration at this time, and I believe we will move forward in a way that is transparent and accountable to the public and respectful to the staff of EMS. I think maybe some other commissioners might want to weigh in on this. Commissioner Lehman?
Thanks. Thank you, Commissioner Lindstrom. Yes, at our most recent board meeting, we did make the decision to stop the integration process and officially take the interlocal agreement off the table for all the reasons Commissioner Lindstrom has stated, and that were clear in the resolution itself. This was not to end integration, but to put the process on pause. And I would just ask you all to think about the pause button that we all have on our electronics. And I would like to reinforce that word. I have read the letters to the editor in support of our decision, letters in support of integration, and the criticism that we should be ashamed of ourselves for the decision that we made. I've talked with a number of community members since our last meeting, and I've taken time to reflect on my role in this decision. As a new hospital district commissioner, I have much to learn, and I do not take lightly the work that was done by our prior board, nor the community advisory group, to determine if integration is the right move for our EMS and fire departments. Hundreds and hundreds of hours were spent in this process, and I respect and I value the work which was done. I take this role very seriously. As a public hospital commissioner, I am part of the team that provides leadership for our EMS. It is my duty to provide leadership and direction for our EMS and hospital district and to assure the medical health care needs of our community within the scope of our role are met within the limit of our budget. And I have an important role in assuring the health of our EMS coupled with the fiscal responsibility of your tax dollars. I'd like to share with you a little about myself and what I stand for as a commissioner, which may help you understand why I voted for the integration process to be paused at this time. I was very fortunate to have had an extraordinary mentor in my life, my father, who was a 30-year career Marine. He retired and lived in the last 24 years of his life on this island, deeply involved in service to our community. He started Sunset Point Fire Station here on the island in the 1970s, where he was chief for a time, and I was a volunteer for a short time. I'm a retired RN and have worked in healthcare here on the island before we even had any EMS. One time as a brand new young RN performing CPR on a patient alone in a parking lot at the convalescent center with no one to call. I cherish our EMS. But back to my dad. He commanded men during World War II behind enemy lines in the South Pacific. He commanded men in the trenches during the Korean War, and he was commanding officer of the 7th Marines Regiment in Vietnam. He would never send a soldier in where he would not go, and he was deeply respected for that. Two important things I learned from my father about leadership were, number one, always, always take care of your people, and number two, do the right thing. I look at the staff of EMS as my people, and they're going through an incredibly stressful time during this pandemic. They are in the front lines, going into situations, not knowing when their life might be on the line. I can also deeply relate, as I have recently resigned from my work as an RN because of the COVID-19 crisis. Our EMS staff need all the support and attention from their chief and the board. And integration, while not being taken off the table, is not essential at this time. We can afford to stop the process so that we can support and strengthen our staff and organization before we might turn it over to new leadership during its tenuous and stressful time. Why would we add extra stress of this very big change to our EMS when we can wait to see the outcomes of this pandemic? Number two, doing the right thing. The CAG report listed 7 absolute conditions for integration, and none of these recommendations have yet been met. We need to assess and evaluate those conditions to assure the process will move forward with complete transparency and assurance that our EMS staff have firm footing and that their job to protect it. And based on the CAG recommendations, build a financial analysis as to the viability of those recommendations as our community navigates the economic impact of this pandemic, which is an unknown variable at this time. And please note, just recently, our local public library just stopped work on the expansion of the library due to the unknown financial situation of our tax dollars related to this pandemic. So as a member of this board, I promise our community to commit to assuring strong leadership within EMS, reviewing the Citizens Advisory Group report and recommendations for a path forward for EMS, and to build a financial analysis as to the viability of those recommendations. I'm also very interested in looking at how things can be improved, how we can be the best, and not doing something because that's the way we've always done it. History does not define who we are, nor who we can become. And one final thing that I would like to share. How could one possibly be ashamed of taking care of people and doing the right thing? Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do I have any other comments from the board at this time?
That was very passionate, Trish. You should run for public office.
I just did.
That's right. Oh, you are in public office, aren't you? I would just second that. Dr. Corsa's statement was so wonderful, and there's not really anything I disagree with. And when people say, oh, don't you understand how good integration is for the community? I think as commissioners, we do understand how good it is for the community. And I want it to happen, personally. I know that I do. And I think that it's just a matter of, COVID came along, so I think planning became more difficult, communication became more difficult with the fire board and with the steering committee not meeting, really, things not happening. So that was a holdup of sorts. We were blown off course with annexations and didn't happen either. So there was some plans that we had seen coming forward soon. And then, we just don't have the plans in place. And I think EMS has been like a organic machine running in a wonderful way here, but it's not always, everything's not in writing. And I think when we start to move toward changing things, you have to have policies and procedures and to talk about roles. And there's just some things that the board has asked for and wants, and for many reasons haven't materialized. And it feels like we can't really go forward responsibly without having those in place, so we know what happens if we do suddenly get a surge of coronavirus. So we know what happens, we as public hospital district, maybe that I think the chief knows potentially what would happen, but I think we need to know for our own security, financially, legally, and taking into consideration staff and volunteers, that we all know, that we know that everything will be taken care of and that there's a plan in place for how it's going to look with potential obstacles coming up as well. So that's my statement. No, nothing about my dad, nothing exciting like that. I haven't saved any lives in any parking lots or anything, but that's my statement.
I wish I could say that that life I saved, but I couldn't.
Oh my gosh. Oh
yeah.
My.
Very sad.
Even more difficult.
Yeah.
Thank you, commissioners. Commissioner Clary, Commissioner Loring. Good. Are we ready to move to public audience participation? Nathan, are you ready to go?
Yes. So I have 2 maybes and 1 firm, and then 1 person who just emailed me and said that they agreed with what Trish said and didn't need to comment after all. So we'll start with Chair Lindstrom. Is it okay if I just launch into it? Do you want me to just read the names?
Or, okay. Yeah.
Let's see. George Johnson, would you like to make a comment? He was a maybe. You can press star 6, or I think it's 6 pound, one
yeah,
or the other.
I'm on the call. I'm on the call, Nathan.
Hey, yeah, we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I wasn't sure if I was going to say anything. It kind of depends on what goes on, but I think I will. And partly because I think it's worth responding to some of the things Commissioner Lankman said and some of the things that were said at the meeting a few weeks ago when we passed that resolution. Because I can't accept what I'm hearing for one thing. The first is that the pandemic is a reason to hold off on talking about integration and planning. No, it isn't. As a matter of fact, this is the ideal time to talk about it, because this has got to be a record low call volume for the last couple of months, in fact, thanks to the pandemic response with lockdowns and bars closing and restaurants closing and nobody on the island and no moped rentals and all the things that generally would generate calls for fire or EMS or both are not happening. So while the protocols are in place to deal with the response that EMS personnel go through and fire personnel have to do for the new world of coronavirus, there's literally less to do now than there ever has been in a spring the last 2 decades probably for these agencies. So let's plan on integration. You don't have to do the integration this month, but you can plan for it. The second thing is the financial insecurity of what's going to happen because of this pandemic has absolutely nothing to do with your revenues or fire district revenues, because you're almost entirely property tax funded, and that is as guaranteed income as there could ever be. So you know exactly how much money you're going to have this year and next year, as does the fire district. So you don't have financial insecurity. You don't have anything but maybe some fear about the new protocols related to COVID-19. But if you're holed up in an office making plans for org charts, job descriptions, budgets, capital improvement plans for equipment, and so on, none of that should be that scary. And certainly all of it you have time for right now. So putting it off, especially if you say we're going to put it off until the end of this pandemic, which could be sometime next year, God knows when, is, I think, not actually a good plan. So I would like to encourage, and by the way, the fact that they couldn't pull off the boat to annex the town into the fire district has, again, little to do with planning, because you can do this with or without annexing the town into the fire district with just the addition of EMS into the existing interlocal agreement by which Fire 3 provides fire services to the town. So all of this is in the CAG report except for the COVID part, and that part of it, as I say, I just can't accept. By the way, I have to, as an aside, say I completely respect not only you, Commissioner Lehman, but also your mom and dad, both, frankly. Ross and BJ were the best people I can think of right now. But moving on,
thank you, George.
I would like you to really, as much as possible, plan on making the change. I realize now that the steering committee wasn't working. I talked to a few of you, and I understand that there is a problem with the process. But I encourage you, as soon as you possibly can, today would not be too soon, to put together a plan to get this process rolling again and get back on track. If you guys have to meet with the fire commission in a joint meeting, just do it. If the ILA isn't acceptable to you, toss it out and come up with an MOU or something else that you like better. But don't just pause because, oh golly, this coronavirus has my head spinning, because that's just not really a good excuse. So I would love to see something come out of this that says we have a new plan for how to move forward. And if you need some help with that, I'm sure there are other members of the CAG who would be happy to contribute to the cause. I know I've. So that's mostly what I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, George.
Next, the next person was Dan Paulson. Or would you like to comment? He was a maybe, I think. We'll give you a moment to figure out how to unmute yourself. It's star six. Okay, let's move on to Dr. Lauren Johnson. Dr. Lauren Johnson. Dr. Johnson also sent a statement. Okay. I don't have anybody else. Chairman Lindstrom, I don't know if you want to allow an open mic for people who didn't email in, or if you want to move on. It's been 10 minutes, I think.
Well, we have public comment at the end of the meeting as well, so if we feel like people aren't able to comment now, maybe that can be resolved by the end of the meeting. We have an awfully long meeting ahead of us.
Okay.
Are you seeing anyone else pop up, Nathan?
No, no one else emailed me. If there are members of the audience who'd still like to comment, email me. We can get you at the end. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Loring. I'd like to recommend that we open it up for a brief moment in case people do want to comment, so they don't have to just email away to the end. In case there's something out there, it'd be nice to do it as a batch.
Sure. Yeah.
Is there anybody that wants to speak?
Okay, let's see, I'm unmuted. Okay, thank you. Gosh, I can't wait till we can meet in person. Okay, so we've done that. We've had our supervising physician report. It looks like it's Superintendent Hutchins. You are up.
Okay, thank you. So I'm reporting on the month of April. For cash, we had a receipt of $480,980.64. And of that large amount, there were property taxes made up the most of it. And they actually, when they all were posted for April 30th, we were just down 2%. From April of last year. And for year-to-date property taxes, we were only down 1%. This was a really good effort by the treasurer's office to just work with people one-on-one to get their property taxes in or give more time. Quite a few people did take advantage and pay their property taxes for the year. So that helped not have a big decrease in this month. So going forward in October, depending on what happens with the coronavirus, the financial picture, we probably will have a little bit of a bigger decrease because people will have already paid their property taxes. But so far, this is a good report. That we were only down 2% for April. We had a few small refund from the UPS for money they held out for Inter-Island Medical Center way back in 2012. So they refunded that to us. It was $135.34. So it made our ending cash balance for April to be $746,352.20. For disbursements, we had $3,328 for first quarter commissioner fees and $264 in payroll taxes. And the rest was $553,752 for accounts payable. And yes, that is a very large amount that we usually don't have, but we paid our $511,294 for our end of last year's Peace Health subsidy. So that made up the predominant amount of disbursements. We didn't have any public records requests in April, so we only had two for the year. That's cost us about $500. And if you looked at the financial reports that were generated by Eden, you can see that it was just a basic month. We had usual expenses, except for the large expense to Peace Health. And the financial statement by fund that have expenditures and revenues, we were 33.4% through the year, and most everything was underneath that. And so we're looking good so far for the end of April. Does anybody have any questions about the financials? I'm sorry, somebody is weed whacking right next to me. Did anybody have any questions on the financials? I'm gonna go shut my door real quick.
The joys of video conferencing. This is
okay. Yeah, he's like right out there next door. Okay, so I'm sorry. Any questions on the financials? Nope.
I had just one or two quick ones, Superintendent Hutchins.
Okay.
The first one had to do with that state audit figure. That higher than usual?
It was
budgeted, what, $20,000, and it was actually for one?
The state audit figure is the product of two audits, because we've been having an audit every year for like the past 3 years. So part of that figure was actually for the audit before. And also the EMS pays us back half of the audit expenses, and they had not made any reimbursements for this past audit. So next month you'll see that go down a bit for us. But yes, it is higher than we usually do. Usually we have audits every 2 years, but when we switched to having a cash basis, they wanted to make sure we got off on a good solid foot. So for the first few years, they wanted to do some yearly audits, and so that's why.
Okay, thank you. That was it, actually.
Okay. Operationally, we're still operating under the Governor Inslee's meeting where we can have remote meetings. It's extended through May 31st, so we'll have to see when that gets there how we can have our meetings. And I also reported that we did not get the planning grant that we had applied for, hopefully, that was going to start in July. It was for $100,000. But there were over 300 organizations that had applied for that. And we actually, they give you a score, and then they tell you your weaknesses for when you turn in your grant. But we actually scored 94 out of 100, and we had no weaknesses on our grant. So we did really well, but we didn't get the first round of the money. But that grant was applied for well before the COVID-19 things started happening. So there might be some organizations that were awarded that grant that cannot meet the restrictions on that. Usually when you have a big grant like that, there are some organizations that are not ready to accept the money. So there's still a slim possibility that we might could come in on the second part of that if somebody drops out, because we did score so high and we didn't have any weaknesses. The second grant that we applied for in conjunction with the Inner Island Healthcare Foundation was a care coordination grant, and that will be awarded to start September 1st. So we probably were here sometime in July or August about that grant. So I'll keep you posted on that. And then, of course, I just want to remind any of the public listening or out there that our county has that wonderful COVID-19 page on the San Juan County website, that if you log into there, it's has a banner right there on top. So if you want to follow along with information that's happening, changes daily, what's happening, you can go right there and get all that information. And just recently, our county did get to move into phase two. So right now we are in phase two. And then there will be more information on what it will take to go to phase three, but we just got accepted and we are in phase two. So thank everyone for all their hard work and doing the restrictions and keeping everybody safe. And that's my report.
Thank you. Any more questions for Superintendent Hutchins? Okay. Then we move on to Chief Kutzing. Your operations report, please.
Thank you. Well, good evening, commissioners. I think you've all had a chance to take a look at the operations report that was sent out on Friday. Nothing substantially changed from that draft. But I do want to just point out some little highlights and let everybody know. Basically, with our statistics, we're down in terms of call volume about 13% from the same period from last year. But our shoot times or the time from page until we're rolling, we're holding at about 2.5 minutes. Again, that kind of accounts for all hours and all response zones. So we're doing all right with that. Also, just to kind of punch up our average response time, which is from time of page to being actually on scene, again, stays within our suburban benchmarks. The average response time was 9 minutes and 13 seconds, with 94% of our calls being under 20 minutes, and 68 being under 10 for all areas of the island. So the other highlight there is in town, our response time is 7 minutes and 49 seconds, with 83% of the calls being under 10 minutes. So we're within urban benchmarks with what's going on in town. In terms of our finances, basically for this period from January through April, 33% into the year, we're about 38% of our expected budget projections. So we're doing above what would be projected into this portion of the year, and our expenses are at 26.9% of budget projections. So we're below our expectations there with expenses. The GEMT, we're only collecting about 17.5% of what we projected, so a little behind with that. That kind of makes sense given the fact that our call volume is down. We did receive an HHS grant for COVID-19 through the CARES Act, that was in the amount of $12,740. So extra money's coming in to help offset some of the costs of responding to the COVID-19 crisis. Our cash and reserves look really good right now. I've got about 10 months of operating expenses ready and available to us. And of course, as we move later down and through the agenda, we're going to do a little bit of, hopefully a little bit of moving money back into reserve accounts so that they're marked into the right places, so we can do our capital improvements, equipment improvements, and vehicle replacements. So that will be coming a little bit later. Also to note that we did receive our reconciliation of ending cash balances from the auditor's office, and basically there was about $146,000 more in our ending cash than what we had projected. So our numbers have been kind of adjusted accordingly. So again, some of the other highlights in terms of IAFF, Local 3219, we did receive a petition that our EMTs, our full-time staff EMTs, are looking to join that collective bargaining unit. So we've been in touch with PERC, and we've been in touch with our the hospital district's attorney, Rich Davis, following his lead on the process, making sure that we're doing it in the correct way. We're still waiting to hear back from PERC in terms of, and I'm sorry, PERC is the Public Employees Relations Commission. And I think the step that we're waiting on is a verification of signatures and to make sure that the statement of intent from those EMTs matches their signature, and we'll move forward into how we need to go about and start the bargaining process to make sure that those EMTs are represented, if that's in fact, you know, found to be that they do indeed want to join. And I don't have any doubt that that those signatures will check out. So again, I think it's probably prudent on our part. In the past, we've had part of the bargaining unit to include the chief, the superintendent, the hospital district's attorney, and then a member from the hospital district. So it may be worthwhile to start talking about that to see who we may want as a representative from the hospital district to be part of that negotiation team. In terms of operations, we're still operating under our COVID-19 response model. Again, trying to limit the number of volunteers who are responding and filling the second seat on that ambulance so that we can have a quick response time. And again, keep the number of responders limited to help with their exposure and to help with the exposure to the citizens from responders who are, you know, going to all areas of the island. As Pam mentioned, we are in phase two. And our plan is to try to be a step behind in terms of adjusting our response model so that in case we do get an uptick in patients, that we are prepared and ready to go. And so by lagging a little bit, we're actually a step ahead. So our plan moving forward is to reevaluate come the mid-June, which gives us about 2.5-3 weeks of time under phase two and see where we are. Hopefully we can get back to normal with our responses. The other things that have been going on operationally, we've been assisting other healthcare providers with N95 mask fit testing. A lot of our healthcare partners throughout the island have said, yes, we understand the importance of N95s, but a lot of them didn't realize that those masks need to be tested to see that they are fitting properly. So we've agreed to help out the dentist's office, doctor's offices, clinics, help them make sure that they're wearing the proper masks. And that's Heather and Lainey and Peggy and I believe Katie English has been involved with that, helping making sure those masks are fitting properly. We did actually find a set of masks that one of the dentist's offices were using that we believe were probably counterfeit masks. They did not work at all. So it's good to know that these healthcare partners are actually going through the process and making sure that we're doing the right thing. So I felt very good about that. The other thing that I wanted to let you know operationally is we've replaced our phone system with a VoIP, voice over internet type phone system. We found that our old phones were very, very difficult to program. There was a lot of outdated information on that. We did a little analysis and found that the cost of operating this new system saved money from the regular landline that paid for the hardware and will continue to be a cost savings to us. So we've got those installed now, and hopefully you don't recognize any sort of degradation in service. We haven't here on our end, and felt good about that as well. The CODAN radio project is moving forward. Dave Halloran with the Department of Emergency Management is kind of our point person for the county in dealing with that project moving forward, and the statement of work has been finalized. I do believe it's been finalized, or it's in close to being finalized, so that we can move forward regardless and start working on upgrading the radio system throughout the county so that we have better coverage. The 24-hour shifting, we do realize that we've got some scheduling issues to reconcile. Being that those EMTs are now wanting to join the collective bargaining, that's going to have to be something that is part of the process to figure out how we can best take care of the scheduling issues that were kind of uncovered, to make sure that we're doing the right thing by the EMTs and by the laws in place. So we'll be working through those issues as we start the bargaining process. Our staff training, we've been doing the best we can remotely. Team meetings, much like we're having right now, we had one last night with Dr. Corsa about, I want to say there was close to 35 people involved, and there are challenges to it, but for the most part, it works pretty well. We were able to do our quality assurance, quality improvement, and actually had part of a demonstration talking about medical issues. This last one was congestive heart failure, and able to watch a presentation through that and have good interaction as best as we can, given the challenges of the remote system. So we're continuing that. We've also gotten word from the Department of Health that we're good to go with small group training. So we've got a plan in place to try to catch up, bring in small groups, do the skills testing that we need, and get back to a more rigorous training schedule. So that's going to be happening.
Ask a quick question? Just please. How many people can you guys have now in a training session?
Well, you know, they didn't have specific guidelines. We're going to try to limit it around five. Our teams are made up of groups of 10, but we often feel that, you know, that as we're trying to do this, we think that we're going to be pretty solid around that 5 to 7. We've got some space so we can spread out. We'll make sure that everybody's masked up and, you know, trying to maintain as the best we can with social distancing. And we've got some areas that we can go, you know, some people working in the bay, some people working in the training room. So we'll try to accommodate as many as we can, but the plan moving forward is to use those teams to kind of facilitate that and kind of give each one a block and then rotate through as so we don't have the whole 40 or, you know, 45 responders in the station at the same time. The last things that I wanted to let you know, again, kind of related to the COVID-19, we did some more additional PCR testing through Dr. House's office. No new cases popped up. Nobody showed up with any sort of positive either symptoms or tested positive for the virus. We also did our first batch of blood serum and antibody testing. I want to say there were about 40 folks involved here on the island that got blood draw. Sent that off to UW Virology, and nobody has antibodies except for our one responder who was a positive test case, obviously has antibodies. So that's the only individual that we have that we know of right now. We helped facilitate that same process over on Shaw and Orcas and Lopez. Haven't heard back yet. I'll double check and find out. But so far, nothing's come back positive. I was kind of excited. I was hoping that there would be a few of us that would have antibodies for this, but so we might be able to help somebody down the road, but nobody's tested positive for antibodies yet. So that's kind of where we are. Those are the highlights. I'm happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Chair Lindstrom, I've got a few questions if I might.
Please, go ahead.
All right, this is Commissioner Loring, by the way, sorry. Hello, Chief Kutzing. Thank you for that report.
Absolutely.
My first question is a little silly, but did I miss that 66th call? Because when I looked in the report, I swear it only added up to 65, so I just didn't know if there was something going on there with the department runs. That's not necessarily something we have to go over now, but...
Oh, I had 66 runs for April, and I'm not sure what the discrepancy between the 66 and the 65 that you got.
Okay. So, yeah, I was just adding up the actual calls below the.
Oh, I understand. And, you know, and sometimes it has to do with the reporting period. The last day of the month sometimes is reported and sometimes not. So I'll see if I can track that down and why that one call, where that's popping and we're not getting where that discrepancy is coming from.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. With that voice over internet protocol, do you have a backup for when the internet is out? I just asked because in my experience, that is a less reliable form of communication than a landline.
Yes, we did maintain one landline, and that so that's there, and it also ties into our alarm system in terms of the fire alarms and smoke alarms. So, yeah, we maintain that.
Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have a question, maybe a recommendation. I've noticed that the COVID-19 reporting, and I know you're not directly responsible for that, but I'm assuming you're working with people who are doing that. Mm-hmm. I noticed that they have now shifted online to the only updating the website if there are confirmed cases or every Thursday. And my recommendation would be that updating a website to show lack of confirmed cases could be really helpful as well, I think, for the public.
I'd be happy to pass that on. You're spot on with that. If there is a new case that shows up, they will make those announcements. The EOC has been very good about making sure of notifying the healthcare providers and the EMS providers throughout the county if there's a new case that shows up. But they had decided to the number of patients tested to just delay that and report once a week. But I'll pass on that concern to the EOC.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it can just be reassuring to see it's been updated that day and that there aren't new cases that day.
Absolutely.
And then I had just a couple of questions on the financials.
Mm-hmm.
One, it looked like there was quite a bit of medical equipment that was purchased this last month. Did you mention that already?
I think that may be the payment that came through with the Life Pack 15s.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And there was also a fair amount of training this past month, or funding for that. Was that also just a different payment or something? I thought it looked like a $10,000 for April.
For April. Can you point
out? Sorry, it was page 68 I have in my notes.
Okay, let me take a look here.
I'm trying to get there. Of those, of the expenditure status report.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, not that big a deal. It wasn't a huge percentage. I was just curious. Training provided to external parties. Just, yeah, what that looked like in April.
Right, and then those are part of the outreach programs, and that was the wilderness first responder classes that we do for Camp Al-Kaila, and then of course that's offset by the revenue brought in from the fees associated with those classes. We had a pretty good size class. We paid for the instructors doing that, and that's why that number looks big for April, because those expenses were paid out.
Sure. No, I was actually just surprised that level of training was able to occur in April, I guess. So that was, I didn't say that question very well.
Yeah, the actual training, I think, happened in late February, and by the time all the bills were paid, they showed up in the April warrants.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. And then I had another, you know, I'll follow up with you on another one, actually. It was just, I noticed that there were a couple of charges I was curious about, so I will, nothing big, I'll follow up with you offline afterward.
Absolutely.